Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Friday, October 22nd. Coming up on today's show, we talk with local pharmacist Charles Beaver about third shots and boosters, the continued rollout of first and second doses, and the timeline for a kid's vaccine for COVID-19 in Canada. Plus, we take a look at the proposed operating budget for the town of Sackville, which councillors will be able to ask questions about at their next meeting on Monday. But first, more local news and information. Circuit breaker measures have been extended for another 7 days. Premier Blaine Higgs and Dr. Jennifer Russell made the announcement in a news conference on Thursday afternoon. Along with extending the restrictions for Zone 1 and other parts of the province, Higgs announced two more deaths from COVID-19 in the province, bringing the death toll to 101, the highest of the Atlantic provinces. Nova Scotia has the next highest death toll at 98. Higgs spoke for just over 20 minutes on Thursday and took a sometimes somber, sometimes rallying tone.
Today is indeed a tough day for our province, and there's no getting around that. It is a tough day for me personally. I recall the first deaths we had at the beginning of the pandemic, and many of you will recall how upset I was, because our target was zero deaths. And obviously earlier in the summer, we felt we were on our way at least to control the current level of deaths that we'd experienced to that point. And now we find ourselves at a milestone that we hope never to achieve. But during hard times, we are presented with the opportunity to rise and show how strong and resilient we truly are as a province. And we can all find fault in what we do differently. And there are many things that each of us would look in hindsight and say, if only. Well, right now, we're dealing with the reality of what we have learned to date, with the reality of the Delta variant, and the reality that there is a real possibility that we can achieve at least 90% of a threshold that could meet our herd immunity.
Higgs referenced his decision to end all public health restrictions at the end of July as something he regrets, though when asked by Brunswick News reporter Savannah Odd if he would apologize to New Brunswickers, he declined.
As Premier of the province, I take responsibility for everything everywhere that relates to the citizens of the province. I obviously deeply regret the situation we're in right now, but I know how hard people worked here to make decisions based on the best information available at the time. We've done that throughout the pandemic, and it's been very successful throughout the pandemic. Unfortunately, the Delta variant has caused us additional challenges that were not anticipated. Our vaccination rates that slowed down dramatically were not anticipated. The situation as we go forward, and knowing that this is not really the end of COVID, no matter how well we come out of this, it's just a way that we have to live with it, was not anticipated maybe months ago, because we hoped we'd seen the end. When vaccines first came out, we hoped we'd seen the end. So, you know, I represent all of the hard work that people have done throughout this province, and how many hours, as I mentioned in my talk today, how hard they've worked, and I commend each and every one of them. And we're in a position now to work through this, and I encourage each and everyone not to give up, not be discouraged by the continual discussion about, oh, well, what if we'd done something differently, but to be encouraged by we too can beat this at this time.
Dr. Russell also spoke on Thursday, making a case for the continuation of circuit breaker restrictions for another 7 days and the addition of a circuit breaker in Campbellton for 2 weeks.
If we were to remove these measures now, before we can be certain that the downward trend in cases and hospitalizations is confirmed, we would only be prolonging these outbreaks. And I want to thank everyone in the hot zone areas for their diligence and their patience as we work to reduce the impact of this virus on our province. I know it is a sacrifice, particularly in limiting your close contacts with people outside your immediate household. But this is precisely what is helping us succeed right now, and please keep doing this. It is working.
The drop in the provincial active case count flattened yesterday as the number of new cases slightly outpaced the number of recoveries. Zone 1 still had the largest share of new cases, with 34 of the 67 new cases reported on Thursday living in the Moncton region. 14 of those cases were in people under 20 years old. All of Zone 1's new cases are under investigation, meaning that public health could not immediately identify a close contact or a travel origin for the infection. Russell also mentioned that she expects that the outbreak at the Drew will be considered over by tonight, pending test results from tests conducted on Tuesday. Those results have not been released yet, but the fact that Russell mentioned the Drew in her address on Thursday afternoon seems to indicate good news for the Sackville Nursing Home. Mount Allison has hired a new sexual violence prevention and education coordinator. Tasia Alexopoulos has taken on the role, working out of the Wellness Center on the ground floor of the Student Center on York Street. Alexopoulos holds a PhD in gender studies and has experience in community organizations focused on sexual health and gender equity. She's also taught at Mount Allison and other universities. Vice President Ann Comfort says Alexopoulos will play a leadership role in educational and prevention programming and training for Mount Allison students, faculty, and staff in this important area. The position was developed as part of a review of Mount Allison's sexual violence policies and procedures taken on after major protests on campus last fall. Booster doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been available for people in long-term care homes for 2 weeks now. This Monday, healthcare workers and First Nations communities will start to have access to booster shots. Local pharmacist Charles Beaver has been administering third doses to immune-suppressed people for several weeks now. I called him up to find out more about boosters, the continuing rollout of first and second doses, and how long we might be waiting for approval of a COVID-19 vaccine for kids. Beaver started off breaking down the difference between the third doses he's now administering at the corner drug and the booster shots, which will be coming online in the coming weeks.
First of all, I'll separate the idea of a third dose from a booster dose.
Okay.
Folks who are receiving third doses right now at the pharmacy are only those who, because of an immune compromised condition, cannot produce adequate immunity from the first two doses. Regardless of risk factors, say somebody who has heart condition and COPD, for example, they're very much at risk if they got COVID of severe illness. However, their immune system is intact. So two doses is enough for that person to have good immunity. Those that are receiving third doses at the pharmacy right now are only very specific groups, people who have had recent or current cancer treatment, people who have had solid organ transplants who have to take immune suppression therapy, certain biologic medications for rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's and those types of conditions, severe kidney disease. So that's third doses. Booster
did
doses.
Did those people need to wait 6 months before having that third dose, or was that part of their regimen from the beginning?
No, it's not. They don't have to wait 6 months. They should be getting it ASAP, and we've been doing those now for several weeks. Now, the rest of the world, especially those over 65, are eager to find out when they're going to get their booster dose. And booster dose is very different because those are for folks like you and I who produce good immunity after two doses. And as you said, we know that starts to wane. Right now in healthcare workers, for instance, after six months after the second dose, it's being recommended that a booster be given. Also, clients in long-term care receive theirs quite early in 2021, many of them, so they need a booster dose ASAP, and others are taking care of that. The general group of people like you and I and others, including those over 65, will be announced in the coming weeks when they're eligible for a booster dose. And so they shouldn't be calling or trying to book appointments now because there is no criteria under which we can vaccinate those other than immune compromised people for a third time.
So as we hear those roll out, I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, long-term care homes are managing that just as they did with the first two doses. The residents will get it within the homes, and so that's being managed. And so it'll roll out. It sounds like it's going to roll out similar to the previous doses, which is by age groups or special groups. And so you just have to wait until your name comes up, sort of thing, or your group comes up.
Yes, basically, yes. I don't know what the government will do as far as phasing the rollout. If they did tell everybody, for instance, over 65 at once that you now qualify, it mm-hmm. would be impossible to manage both the volume of calls or the vaccinations. So we will, regardless of what the government tells us, be doing those that were done first, so mostly by age, but also by other criteria as well, and then work our way through the list in an orderly fashion. For when the time comes, the website is the way to organize that for yourself. Calling the pharmacy is a very bad idea because we're unable to manage the volume of calls even today, and it hasn't even been announced yet. So, you know, the best thing to do once it is announced is we'll put up on our website, just like we did for dose ones and dose twos. Those that want the booster dose will be able to just go to thecornerdrugstore.ca and register there, and then we can get to them as soon as possible in the order that they qualify. I will add that it's flu shot season, and we're working hard already to vaccinate. We're working on the over 65s because they're the most vulnerable population, and everybody over 65 has access to the high dose vaccine if they want it. And everybody else, right down to younger people like you and me, qualify for the regular influenza vaccine like we've had every year for the last several years. Both those services also should be booked on our website, thecornerdrugstore.ca. And,
okay.
Yeah.
And I gather, you know, the vaccine rollout, even for first and second doses, continues. We see, like, the stats from the province, there's a few thousand at least every week that are getting their first shot and second shot. Are you still getting new patients in for first shots and second shots?
Absolutely. We're seeing virtually every day of the week a demand for first doses, and subsequent to that, of course, the second doses follow. We're finding now that when we're able to put out our walk-in doses available sign, that there's lots of folks that, you know, life's busy, they forget, just booking appointments just doesn't seem to work for them. But when they see the sign and know they can just walk in and receive their first dose, they do. I did, I think it was four individuals who, you know, intended to get their first dose probably a long time ago, but just weren't able to just this past Sunday. So we don't do it every day, but this Sunday there was a client who couldn't come any other day, so I had to open a vial, and that left five more doses available for others to receive.
So when that happens, you put out a sign and hope that you can use up those other doses.
We don't hope. We just make sure we do.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess it's like you mentioned, it's a case of people just getting around to it. Do you have any sense? Do people tell you about whether it has anything to do with the mandatory vaccination requirements for, you know, now that we need to show proof of vaccination to do almost anything? Is that impacting people, or do you think it's really just like just time wears on and people are finally getting around to it?
There's certainly both. 3 or 4 weeks ago, when the announcement was first made, there was a lot of folks getting their vaccines, either because they had to for work, and some weren't very happy about it, to be honest. Others, because of, you know, lifestyle, wanting to go to children's sports, restaurants, you know, this type of thing. Now, you know, maybe a little less of that motivation and just, you know, it's time. You know, I perhaps, you know, a lot of folks, you know, are, you know, afraid of needles or, you know, have concerns about the vaccine. Some really good conversations happen prior to the vaccination. A lot of folks do have concerns, and when you talk through them, many or even most of them are completely unfounded garbage. There's no better word, and a few worse ones I could use for what information is floating around on the internet, unfortunately, about, you know, silly things like, you know, does it cause sterility and this type of thing, which of course it doesn't. But yeah, lots of folks are coming in still. So that makes it a very, very busy environment. And I can't impress upon people enough, please don't call, you know, unless it's a very last resort and you're unable to have a friend or yourself, you know, register on the website because we simply cannot manage any more phone calls and try to do our regular work and all the vaccinations that we're now doing.
One more thing I'll ask you about, Charles, before I leave you, is that I know that at the Drew Nursing Home, they're planning to get their booster shots along with their flu shot this year because they're both rolling out at the same time. Is that something you recommend to people to get them both at once? I know the province has said that that's okay as far as they're concerned. What do you think of that?
I'm glad you brought it up. Absolutely. Most of the immune compromised folks that we've been vaccinating, we're offering the appropriate dose of influenza vaccine at the same time. That's new information, or relatively new information, that COVID vaccinations can be given at the same time as other certain types of other vaccinations, like the flu shot. Also, there's no need to wait after receiving the COVID vaccination to receive other vaccinations that are, you know, normal everyday vaccinations like childhood vaccinations or, for instance, a tetanus booster. It greatly simplifies the process. So if a person doesn't want to get both at the same time for some reason, that's fine. They don't need to wait 4 weeks for their next vaccination. They could choose to do it the next day, a week later, 2 weeks later. There's no restriction like that. And that is new news, because up until now, we had been on direction from NACI telling folks to delay any other vaccination after receiving COVID vaccination for 4 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lied before and I said I was going to let you go. I have one more question, which is, I'm sure you've been watching this, but are you taking any bets or making any bets on when we might see approval for a 5 to 11 age range COVID-19 vaccine in Canada?
Well, I'm not a gambler, so I won't take any bets. But however, we're already working to get ready for that eventuality. I expect it to happen in the next 2 months, personally. I hope it does, because rolling it out alongside of influenza vaccine would make a lot of sense. I believe strongly that the 5 to 11-year-old demographic should not be dragged into the pharmacy for that particular service. Some get along just fine, but others, by the time they arrive, are very, very anxious, and the experience is nowhere near as simple as it should be. Childhood vaccinations have been given at the schools for decades, since I was a child, you know, and well before that, I'm sure. So I'm working or approaching the local middle and elementary schools to try to organize that to happen at the schools, and stay tuned. Hopefully there'll be something good that we can announce. We're also proactively trying to have conversations with parents and guardians and any interested parties about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine in younger children, so that when the day comes that they have the choice, that they use the best information available to decide whether or not to vaccinate their child. I believe strongly that this age group is critical that we have a good rate of vaccination because of the rate now. They're the single largest unvaccinated group in our communities. And children usually don't have bad outcomes from a COVID infection, although there have been deaths at every age. And I'll remind folks of that. It's often overlooked, but it's a fact. And also transmission in the community to others who are vulnerable and can become very ill is much, much easier when that whole age group is unprotected. We've only recently seen the devastating effects of community spread when it reached our local nursing home and the very, very sad and tragic outcomes that can happen.
All right, Charles. Well, we'll leave it there for today. Thanks very much for sharing your expertise with us yet again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. You have a good day, Erica.
That was Sackville pharmacist Charles Beaver. Up next, we're talking town budgets. Mayor Sean Michaud won't say explicitly if he backs the plan proposed by town staff to keep the tax rate flat this year in Sackville. Other municipalities with significant property assessment spikes are considering lowering their tax rates to help ease payments for their residents. Both St. Andrews and Moncton have discussed reducing their rates, though even with rate reductions, both would still see increases in taxes paid by residents in the neighborhood of 4-5%. That's because Moncton and St. Andrews are both looking at average increases over 10%. The rise in Sackville's average assessment sits closer to the middle of the pack provincially at 6.9%. Treasurer Michael Beal presented the town's proposed budget on Monday and pointed out that although Sackville is looking at a 6.9% increase in its tax base for 2022, the average increase over the past 5 years is actually just 2.5% due to slow growing or shrinking tax bases in 2018 and 2021. Councillors spent 3 hours going through the operating capital budgets for both the town and the water utility this past Monday. This coming Monday, Council will take another look at the budget to get their questions answered by Beal. Today, we thought we'd take a brief look at the town's proposal for its operating budget, which is proposing a number of areas for increased spending, some of which are optional and some of which match increased costs faced by the town. First up, the biggest of this year's increased costs, RCMP contracts. The cost of wages and overtime for the town's RCMP contract will go up 8% for 2022 by about $115,000. That is actually less than the overall salary increase announced by the RCMP, which was more in the neighborhood of 19%, accounting for cumulative pay raises since 2017. The total cost of the RCMP contract for 2022 is budgeted at $1.5 million. But that's not all for the RCMP, because in addition to accounting for 5 years of pay raises in 2022, there's also back pay that will be owed to all those officers. Beal has recommended setting aside $120,000 for covering back pay. We don't yet know the final amount that Sackville will owe, though Beal seems to think it will be in the range of $200,000. The next increased cost is actually unknown. Salaries and wages of town staff will likely go up in 2022 because their collective agreement expires at the end of this year. Beal won't say exactly how much the town has budgeted for those to-be-negotiated increases, and it's difficult to parse out because the increases are embedded throughout many departmental budgets. In addition to whatever raises get negotiated with the QP local representing town staff, there's also some money set aside for consultants that the town will hire to help with contract negotiations. Another increase this year comes in the form of a new youth sports subsidy. Council recently approved spending $65,000 on fee rebates for Sackville families with kids registered in hockey, skating, lacrosse, and swimming. Insurance costs are going up for all municipalities in the province, and Sackville is looking at approximately $30,000 in additional insurance bills this year. Beal says Sackville's 10% insurance hike is actually not as bad as some towns who are looking at 20 to 30% insurance increases. Staff is proposing to spend about $34,000 to replace the full-dress uniforms of Sackville's volunteer fire department. The current black uniforms are no longer available at a reasonable price, so a wholesale replacement of all uniforms with blue ones is in order, according to Chief Craig Bowser. The town is also proposing to set aside $30,000 to take on an active transportation plan this year. That's not surprising considering that the topic has come up recently, such as when Sackville Town Council opted to lift the ban on skateboards on town streets. At a public meeting on September 20th, retired Dr. Ross Thomas also made a case for increased investment in traffic calming and other active transportation infrastructure. A couple of new or increased spending items are proposed for public works. Because the price of asphalt has been going up, that's meant Sackville has reduced the amount of patching they can do over the years. This year, the town proposes a $20,000 bump in the budget, bringing it up to $240,000. Public Works has also found some storm sewers are getting clogged with siltation and other debris, and so they're proposing to introduce a flushing program this year for a cost of about $25,000. The last item we'll mention today is a small allocation, about $10,000, for the Rural Health Action Group. The group is proposing to create a fund to help with local healthcare recruitment. Former Sackville Mayor John Hyam presented to Town Council on September 20th and made the request for a contribution. It's not clear exactly what the $10,000 would be used for, but it sounds like the group is hoping to hire to bring in some expertise in creating a recruitment program and establishing a fund under the Sackville Memorial Hospital Foundation. This $10,000 wouldn't necessarily go to recruitment efforts per se, but would seed the program for the future. Stay tuned to CHMA for further coverage of Sackville's budget season. Town Council will meet on Monday to have their questions about this year's proposed budget answered. The meeting starts at 7 p.m. and will be streamed online. To attend in person, register in advance with the town clerk, Donna Beal. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Friday, October 22nd. As always, we hope you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.